Welcome to the Casey Kohar Show, a celebration of words. I'm thrilled and honored to have as my guest today Lori R. King, and we will be discussing Locked Rooms, which is Ms. King's new release, which is published by Bantam Dell. It's currently available in your bookstores. And first of all, Lori, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, glad to be here.
I was looking through my New Yorker, and I saw an ad, and they're having a promotion with you where people have a chance to win a cruise. And so if you would, why don't you tell us a little bit about that contest so that we can let the listeners and the readers know, and people like to work out crossword puzzles, about what's going to be going on with that.
Well, first of all, you can't blame me for the clues of the crossword.
Okay.
It's a thing that Bantam decided to do. And I thought it was just really great fun. They have a two-page spread going, and there's a crossword puzzle that is based on all of the Russell books, not just the current one. And for those who don't memorize books as they're reading them, which I think is most of us, there's excerpts on the Lori King website, which is loriarking.com. You can look up the excerpts, read them, and answer all the clues.
Well, that's great. Now, Lori, let's go back, before we talk about Locked Rooms, let's talk about your development as a writer. And as I was doing some research, your career as a writer, it really is much different than most of the authors that I interview, and I found it very fascinating. And when you began writing fiction, it was pretty much around 1987, wasn't it?
I began writing then, yeah. We didn't actually sell, and my first one wasn't published until 1993, so I had a few years to try it out before we had to actually go public.
Yeah. And the first novel that you published was A Grave Threat, which won the Edgar Award and the Creasy Award.
It's A Grave Talent, yeah.
I'm sorry, A Grave Talent.
Okay.
But that was not the first book that you wrote, was it?
No, and I think that's actually fairly common of people who have two or three manuscripts in their desk and when they finally sell one. I think the main difference between what I did and what some others have found is that I eventually did publish those that I wrote before A Grave Talent, so that the first two I wrote were The Beekeeper's Apprentice and A Letter of Mary, which became the third in the Russell and Holmes series. So they've all been published eventually, just not in the order I wrote them.
Okay. And when you started with The Beekeeper's Apprentice, tell us a little bit prior to having that idea and starting that writing, tell us a little bit about the background that you had. You had a theological background and you've done a lot of studying and had a lot of degrees. And what was it that kind of started leading you towards The Beekeeper's Apprentice, do you think?
Probably my kids.
Uh-huh.
I was a mom. I was a full-time mom at the time. And in 1987, my son was 4 years old and went off to preschool three glorious mornings a week. So I could take that time, which was probably, 8 hours a week, something like that, and do what I wanted to with it. Well, the great love of my life had always been reading fiction, and it occurred to me that maybe I was grown up enough now, being 35 years old, to actually write some. And I started writing, and I wrote the first line of what became The Beekeeper's Apprentice, and didn't look back.
And one of the things that I find fascinating is The Beekeeper's Apprentice is the first in the Mary Russell series, and now Locked Rooms is the eighth. And taking on the topic of a 15-year-old girl that meets Sherlock Holmes, that takes a lot of courage, I think, for any writer, but particularly a beginning writer. And I'm wondering, when you first started doing that, did you have any concerns about the Holmes Society and all the history that goes into the love of that series?
I think it's one of those situations where ignorance is bliss. I had very little idea that there were these vast numbers of people who, made a living out of homes, not by paying their bills, but their passion in life was these 60 stories that Conan Doyle had written. If I had realized how many people were out there, how much they knew, and how protective they were, I probably would have found the whole process rather daunting and maybe have done something else. But because I went into it thinking that there weren't any people out there who, A, would read the books I was reading, or B, paid much attention to the Sherlock Holmes stuff, I just went right ahead and did it. And it was only later that I began to realize how perhaps people might get a little touchy about the idea of a 15-year-old who goes and becomes the partner and finally marriage partner of this gentleman. But they've actually been very generous and accepting of my quirks and oddities.
Good. Has that have you been accepted into some of those societies now and get letters from those people at this point in time?
I at first they were very touchy, and recently they've become much more forgiving when they realized, for one thing, these are not romances, and I think they were very concerned because there is this tendency to write Sherlock Holmes into romances. That's really quite frightening. In this case, that's not the thrust of the stories. And I think once I reassured most of the Sherlockians that I wasn't indulging in romantic twaddle about their great man, they were reassured. And so I haven't joined the societies. I haven't been asked to join them. But on the other hand, I am positively reviewed by a number of them, including the Baker Street Journal. And I have a number of friends and colleagues who are in that, in the various groups. So they are very generous-hearted.
Well, that's good. Well, let's talk about Locked Rooms, which is the eighth book in the series. And it takes place in San Francisco, and it involves Mary Russell going back and dealing with some of the events in her past. And if you would, why don't you tell the listeners a bit about what you wanted to accomplish with Mary Russell in Locked Rooms?
Well, one of the advantages of a series is that you can mention episodes and people, characters, in books that you don't necessarily have to solve or develop in that particular book. You can bring them in later. So that in the very first one, The Beekeeper's Apprentice, mention is made of Russell's family and how they were killed in a motor car accident south of San Francisco in 1914, just before that book opens. So that in the book that I had out last year, The Game, Russell and Holmes are in India. And when they leave India, instead of turning back to England, they turn the other way around, cross the Pacific, and end up in California, where she has various business interests of her father's to finish off. Well, when they get to California, she discovers that what she thought about her past is not, in fact, the case, that her memories are unreliable, and she has to set about discovering exactly what was happening to her in San Francisco when she was young, and what happened to her family.
And a lot of it has to do with the fire, the Great San Francisco Fire of 1906. And when you were writing those parts, did you have photographs that you could consult, or historical books that you could look at? Because when I read the scenes, they're very well drawn, and I really had a sense that I was in that location as they were telling the stories.
Yes. Yes, the book, Locked Rooms, actually has three settings, three time settings. There's the 1906 quake and fire. There's 1914 when her family dies. And there's the current storyline, which is 1924. So it sort of straddles most of this young woman's life. But the 1906 material, following the fire that was begun by the quake, it was one of the best documented disasters in modern times. There were all sorts of people living here, taking photographs, and keeping journals, so that there's more material about the quake and fire than you could possibly fit into one novel. And what I do when I'm researching something like this is not so much take specific events that people write about, but I aim for their feelings and their attitudes and, you know, what their immediate impression was and what they did in the days following. And that I work up a storyline based on the reactions and the actions of the individuals that write about them, so that, you know, people, not only reporters in the papers, but afterwards people writing their memoirs.
Okay. And in the in one of the timelines, you have, which I thoroughly enjoyed, you have Dashiell Hammett makes an appearance.
The book is set in San Francisco in 1924, and so one of the things that you look for as a historical novelist is who was there at the time that I can use to make a sort of cameo and add some flavor to it. So I had originally intended to have Hammett as just that, a cameo. He walks in, he has a scene, he, you know, makes an impression, and then he disappears. However, he wouldn't go away. So I wrote him in, and he sort of became a much larger part of the storyline than I had originally intended. He becomes, in effect, Holmes's irregular troops, because Holmes's normal partnership with Russell isn't functioning correctly, because Russell is so preoccupied with these faulty memories that she's having that she becomes an unreliable partner. So he takes on Hammett instead.
Yes, and it's very effective.
Which you gotta admit, it's kind of fun to have, you know, Holmes and Hammett working together in San Francisco. I had fun with it anyway.
I loved it. In fact, a friend of mine, Diane Johnson, wrote a wonderful biography on Hammett.
Yeah, it's a great one.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to back and consult it, because I think you threw in a short story of Hammett's in there, and I've got to figure out the genesis of that.
I am impressed with how many people still know the Hammett stories well enough to pick up on that. Because when I made a scene with a rather quirky old Chinese feng shui master, I was basing his personality and the dialogue that goes on around him on a Hammett short story with the unfortunate name of Dead Yellow Women.
Okay.
But this, of course, takes place before Hammett writes that short story. So I was providing a background and inspiration for Hammett's later story, thinking that probably, you know, one person in 10,000 would pick up on that. But obviously Hammett still has his fans.
Yes, that's good to hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I thought that, yeah, I really liked that, the fact that you did use Hammett in the San Francisco setting. I thought it just worked beautifully.
Thank you. I had fun with it, as I said.
Now, when Locked Rooms is told in the format is five different books alternating between Mary Russell and Holmes, and when you're plotting out the stories and you're telling them, is that the easiest way for you to keep what the two sleuths are doing clear to the reader and apart for you as a writer?
Oh, you mean making them separate books?
Yes.
It seems to make the structure more easily grasped, rather than just having chapters running from beginning to end. Because the way the story came out involved, normally the Russell stories are first-person narrative. She's talking the whole way through.
Right.
And there'll be occasional snippets of other people, but it's always in the form of, I had a letter that explained this and that, or, you know, someone giving her the information somehow. But it's all in Mary's voice. However, in this book, Mary's voice is unreliable. As I said, because of her faulty memories and her preoccupation, she is an unreliable narrator. So as I was writing, it became more and more difficult to incorporate all the storyline in her voice. So that's when I started writing Holmes and wrote him third person, so that you're following the activities of Holmes and Hammett and some of the others, alternating with Russell's section, so that generally speaking in the story you'll have Russell's narrative And then it'll pick up on Holmes' story, looking at sometimes the same incident in his point of view. So it was a challenge to write it, to make it clear, but it seemed to work best that way.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel, how do you feel about Mary Russell now with some of the issues that have been dealt with in locked rooms? Do you, will she be changed at all going forward in the series, do you think?
I think every book in the series changes the characters, both her and Holmes. I know that some series writers, their characters really don't develop in the course of the book. They are basically whodunits, and it really doesn't matter where the story comes in the series. With my books, I think that the whole point of them for me as a person is that I can explore sides of the individuals involved and allow them to grow in the course of the book. So yes, certainly having met and incorporated her past, Russell will be a different person when she leaves California than when she sailed in.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lori, when you have four standalone novels, you have the Mary Russell series, the Kate Martinelli series. How do you determine what you're going to work on next, or do you sometimes work on two or three things at the same time?
I'm generally working at one at a time, and I usually alternate. The last two books were unusual for me because there were two Russells in a row, but because one of them was in India and one of them was in California, and as I said, that as it developed, the California one had quite a bit of it that wasn't in the same format of Russell's voice. It wasn't like writing the same thing for twice the normal amount of time. I don't know if I get bored or just overly familiar with the characters. So when I've lived with them for a year, I'm tired of that set of characters, and I need to go and look at the others. So that generally what I've done over the last few years is a Russell alternating with either a Martinelli or a standalone. And so in this case, what I'm doing is I'm writing another Martinelli. However, it will have elements of the Russell story. don't ask me how I'm doing that.
That sounds
because,
great.
But it's working out okay. It's starting well.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, generally speaking, I like to alternate. I like to change my scenes and my language and my people from one year to the next.
And one of the things that I reread A Grave Talent, and one of the things I really like about your books is that it seems like I always learn something about the artistic impulse, and there's a particular chapter in A Grave Talent, I believe it's chapter 31, where we learn a lot about Eva Vaughn as a young girl and how she developed as an artist. And that's one of the things I really like about what you do is you're not afraid to really delve into the character and trust the reader to go where you want to go with the characters.
Seems to me that's the main reason why people read, I don't know, novels in general, but certainly my novels, is an exploration of character. I really don't write plot-driven stories. I'm no Agatha Christie when it comes to plots. What I do write are people, and follow the people throughout the course of this crime that occurs. That to me is the whole point of writing in this genre.
Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. And I wish you the greatest success with Locked Rooms, and we'll look forward to the crossword puzzle in next week's New Yorker, and we won't hold you responsible for any of the clues.
And I wish everyone great luck. I hope one of your viewers wins the mystery cruise that they're giving away.
So
let me know how it turns out.